military analyst Mike Lyons, who served with various military organizations, both the U.S. and Europe, throughout his career, respected voice on a number of networks, publications. Mike, welcome. How are you, sir?
Hey, guys. Great to be back with you.
So how surprising was this, the success of this counteroffensive, and how successful was it?
No, very surprising, and it's clearly something that Ukraine had been planning for strategically. It looks like they had some kind of feint that went on in the south in Kherson, where Russia can't lose. They can't if they lose a battle down there, then they start to lose Crimea, then they lose some of that land that they had taken 7 or 8 years ago. But what they were able to do is take an economy of force mission, which means they put less people there in Kherson, faked an offensive there, and brought the majority of the troops to the north in Kharkiv, where they did a classic pincer movement and were able to, you know, rout Russian soldiers that likely were withdrawing anyway, and they were moving to the east and to the south. But this is a real tremendous moral victory for Ukraine as they take back land that has been occupied by Russia since March. I think, you know, again, this is a great day for them. They win a battle, but the question still remains as to whether or not they can win the war or not.
Yeah, a couple of different dynamics in opposition to each other have got me interested. Number one, I understand that some of the economic sanctions against Russia, limitations on exports and that sort of thing, are going to make it more and more difficult for them to resupply their forces. On the other hand, they still are a much larger country, which with many more young men they could call up. How do you see that kind of opposing dynamics working?
So you look in history and you find what analogies are existing, and you see that wars that start what they think they're going to be over quick, it's called the allure of battle, the short war kind of mentality that which Russia had. They thought this was going to be over very quickly in a fast few days, but now, you know, 200 days later, it's into this stalemate war of attrition. And as history has shown, the country that ends up winning this kind of war are the ones that have the higher industrial strength. Well, that's still Russia. Russia still has this capacity, as you said, to put troops and material and men into this fight, whereas Ukraine is going to be somewhat limited. However, it now comes down to the West. If the West does resupply, if the West does provide material, we have the Germans that should be providing panzer tanks and the like, but they haven't done them yet. If the West still remains strong at this, then they can possibly extend this out. But again, history does show that you still have to look at Russia and say they have tremendous capability, which is why we can't say that they're losing, but they haven't lost yet, and Ukraine is winning, but they haven't won yet either.
How much were we involved in this counteroffensive? Do you have any idea?
It's got to do with intelligence and the artillery systems and the fact that we were able to deliver munitions basically on time. If we're chasing the Russians on the other side of the river, there, the Al-Sot River, I think that we were providing them the kind of information that allowed the Ukraine military to attack where they knew that Russia was weak, and they you know, kind of the old saying of kind of punch a hole in something and see what happens. Well, every time they punched a hole there, they kept going further and further. That's the only way I can see them doing this. I mean, some of those Russian units left behind food, rations that were in containers and the like. I mean, retreating armies do things that are crazy all the time, but the amount of convoys, the prisoners of war, all the things, the Russians couldn't get out of there fast enough. And I just look at that and say, you know, we had the intel, we gave them the intel to know where they could attack. So they were likely had great optics. Russia was likely blinded, didn't know what was going on, and allowed the Ukraine forces to really rout the Russian forces there.
So what you're saying about, you know, the bigger country, greater industrial output, it's undeniable. But I'm picturing what the next, you know, chapter of the Russian effort might look like. And I'm picturing worse supplies, even more antiquated arms, and conscripts they've called up. I mean, presumably the first wave of guys was the best they had.
Yeah, they're getting most of their conventional forces destroyed right now on the field. What does China do? Does China allow its client state to be humiliated like this? We see that they're getting artillery shells from North Korea, and that's because likely the things they had in storage for the past 20 years that they're pulling out have been rusted, and they can't use it. They can't. They're not able to fire them effectively. So again, you lay this all over, but they still have this industrial strength. Think North versus South in the Civil War, right? As much as the South fought admirably in certain places. I mean, July 3rd, 1863, if that day goes any different, if Pickett's charge succeeds and the South gets to the high water mark and the North loses that battle, we have a completely different country. Well, that's what's happening right now there. The Ukrainian military is fighting ferociously, doing a lot of things in support, but the bottom line is they were grinded down eventually by the North because it had more industrial power. That's what's going to take place here. Now, it's not going to happen overnight, but that's what's going to happen over the next 6 months.
Wow. So you referenced that particular Civil War battle. So that's the way a big war can go, just that one day, that one battle, that one decision, huh?
Yeah, I think so. I think you look at things overnight, same like D-Day, June 6, 1944. There are certain times in history where had that day gone differently, the world's completely changed. I think that's the most significant day. That day in Gettysburg was the most significant day in the 19th century. I think every teenager in America should be paid to go to Gettysburg and see the sacrifice that was made that day by Union soldiers for those 3 days, and in particular, both sides, both North and South on the field that day.
Amen to that. You know, I was just rereading an account of Gettysburg in which they made clear that at a couple of critical moments, there was a literal foot race for the high ground. And guys who got their three strides first won and repelled the rebels. So anyway, to that point, Mike Lyons, military analyst on the line. Just one more note because I can't let it go. What the hell's up with Germany? Why are they not delivering? Is it their domestic politics or what? It's annoying.
Yeah, no, it's hard to say domestic politics. It's, think about where Germany was 80 years ago and where they are today. And they do have the largest GDP of all those European countries. I think, for example, if they don't get in the game, that you're going to see the Poles and you're going to see the Ukraine absolutely sabotage Nord Stream and Nord Stream 2, those pipelines. They're going to make sure that Germany doesn't get anything from Russia. It's not coming from there, at least. I don't know. I think everybody wants to wake up one day and have it be February 21st, where this it all just kind of goes away. But they owe them those tanks. They owe them the artillery pieces, air defense platforms. Germany has the most capability of those NATO countries right now to make a difference. And right now they haven't been. And the question is, when are they going to get in the game? They won't because they still are hoping among hope that some deal can get worked out.
My final question, the Wall Street Journal editorial board today saying we need to be concerned about Putin using nuclear weapons. Is that still something we should concern ourselves with? How much?
Probably tactical nukes. I don't think that, I think it escalates things. It hurts both sides, obviously, but it also would require then, Russian citizens would get more involved because they know Ukraine doesn't have these nukes. They can try to say they're coming from NATO, but I think that we're still a little bit away from that. I don't expect him to do that right now. He's going to probably try to wait this out for 6 months. He's going to try to freeze out Europe. He's going to hope that Western alliance fails, and he hopes that 2 years from now he'll be able to claim victory. But right now, the Russian military is in really bad shape.
Mike Lyons, military analyst. Mike, always enlightening. Thanks a million for the time. We appreciate it.
Okay, thanks for having me.
So then the political stuff that you're just talking about with Germany, Ian Bremmer, and he studies this sort of thing for a living, but he doesn't think the European countries are going to cave on this energy commitment, that they're going to go ahead and really suck it up and have a really harsh, difficult, expensive winter and are willing to sacrifice in a way that, as is often the case, we as Americans aren't actually having to sacrifice other than tax dollars.
And we're stealing those from our children as usual, deficit spending.
Right. The Europeans are gonna notice it right away. What it's gonna cost to heat your home is just gonna be crazy if you can at all. But Ian Bremmer seems to think that based on all the polling, and I saw some the other day, is what not like 80s and 90 percentile approval for continuing to support the Ukrainians.
Mm-hmm.
That they aren't going to cave.
Well, sunny Spain and Portugal and the south of France, they need to take refugees from northern Europe, at least for the wintertime. A bunch of fat, pale Germans stretched out on the beach there in Portugal, for instance, just to help out.
I just think that could be a big deal. I think Putin is counting on here. Winter's coming. That's when they cave. That's when they all turn against it. And I get my big advantage. And if Europe survives the winter with the population still being supportive of the war in Ukraine, I think Putin's going to have a long spring and summer.
Yeah, could be. Well, Germany, give them those tanks. What is this? What is your story, Germany? So weak. Big promises and no delivery. Huh?
Armstrong and Getty.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.